Zorba Pastor on Your Health is pre-recorded. From Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Carl Christensen, and I'm here with family doc Zorba Pastor. We'll spend the next hour with you in our virtual doctor's office. But Zorba, there's no waiting room here.
No, there's no. Well, there's a waiting room in your mind.
Okay.
Think about the waiting room in your mind while you're waiting for
Is
that
there a
cup
front desk
well,
then in
yeah,
your mind?
Well, yeah, of course. And... you know, while I'm waiting for a cup of coffee, you know, at a coffee shop.
Yeah.
You're in your waiting room.
Maybe there's a concierge.
Right.
There's,
well,
maybe
I don't
a bellhop
yeah, you've
even.
Got your own. You are the concierge, and you are the person waiting. But yes, this is virtual, although we are real.
We're not
AI.
That's right. No wait here to talk
no
to the good
AI
doc.
No AI here either.
We're going to talk healthy living. We'll walk you through a healthy recipe. We'll get to some of your phone calls and emails and a few voicemails as well. And if you have a question for the good doc, the number to call anytime is 800-462-7413. And along with those calls, we'll discuss a few healthy living topics today,
cold
Zorba.
Cold showers.
Oh.
Are they good for you? Do you ever take a cold shower?
Sure, I love a cold shower.
I do not love a cold shower. But some people, we'll talk about the benefits. Is there any risk? We'll talk about cold showers and what they do. And then we're going to jump over to a completely different topic. Antipsychotics for dementia. Not an uncommon thing that are used because people with dementia often have other problems. And we try to sort of get them to, quote, settle down. But in the end, that really causes side effects. There are more side effects than we even realize. They're not good. We'll talk about where they have a place and do not have a place.
All right. And what's our special recipe?
Greek orzo salad. Mm. I love Greek food. I love orzo. I love salad. Hey, what could go wrong with this recipe? Nothing at all.
Hopefully nothing.
Nothing at all.
All right. To the phones we go at 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. Our first caller joins us now from Los Angeles, California. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for having me. Hi, Dr. Pastor.
Oh, thanks for calling. Hope you're doing well. How can we help?
Doing great. An orzo recipe also sounds delicious.
Thanks.
So I've been a smoker for a while, Dr. Pastor, and I had a simple question. You hear, you know, eat well and exercise, and when you quit or when you stop, and I'm wondering, either from your experience, I think I heard you once say that you smoked in the 70s, but I'm wondering, what should you do emotionally when you stop smoking? What should you be adding?
First of all, it is an emotional issue. There's no doubt about it. No, I'm old enough, so I stopped in my 60s, not in my 70s when it came. And it took me 4 times to quit. I mean, it was not easy for me to quit. We've got ways to do that now, but I still remember the last time. I mean, I quit 3rd time, and then I remember I went out with Becky. I think it was Becky Balsam. Can't quite remember her last name, but she dumped me, and then all of a sudden I just said, I gotta smoke again. Picked up a pack of Marlboros, smoked the entire pack all at one, kind of one day. I smoked the entire pack, and then I said, I can't do this anymore, and then went through withdrawal. And I can remember that almost like it was yesterday. We're talking about 50 years ago, so that's it. So let me ask a few questions. How long have you smoked? When did you start?
On and off for 10 years.
For about 10 years. Okay, you did that. And a pack a day, half a pack a day. What are we talking
about? I'd say half.
Half a pack a day. Uh-huh. Mm. And you've tried to quit before?
Lightly.
So what is lightly? Lightly means what?
There's a phrase from an old philosopher. It says, don't let the devil know you're coming. don't just announce you're quitting. So I do it in a very gentle way. It's been about a month and a half now.
Okay. A month and a half where you haven't smoked or month?
Yes.
Okay. So first of all, you're through step number one. A month and a half, you've gone through a step number one. You know, the nicotine receptors in your body, and they're there, are now not activated by the smoking that you're doing. But for many people, they still go through a depression. They can go through a depression anxiety. And that can last for anywhere between 3 to 6 months. For some people, the drug bupropion, Wellbutrin was the name brand, but bupropion, 150 milligrams sustained release once or twice a day, or the 300 milligrams once a day dosing, can help through that period. But it's really the recidivism rate, that's what we talk about. How many people then go back to smoking? And the answer is a lot of people do because they get depressed. You know, they get depressed over it. So I take it you have noticed a change in your emotional makeup?
A little dip, and then actually more positive.
Uh-huh, okay. Have you quit for a while and then gone back to smoking? Has this happened before? You quit for a few weeks and then you went back to it?
I'd say this is the longest stretch.
Okay. Good point. It's the longest stretch, you know. So one of the things I tell people, because I think if you're not depressed, I would not recommend taking the drug bupropion. I wouldn't do that. I mean, I wouldn't do that
at all. Right.
Do you have friends who smoke?
A few, yes.
A few. Do you see them?
Not so much these days. They would be supportive.
No, and the reality is, if you see them and you're smoking, you're much more likely to have a cigarette. Especially if you're drinking or you're inebriated by a little pot, you're just more likely to have that cigarette, and all of a sudden you can go back to that. So I tell people, especially in that first six-month period. If you're with somebody, they're lighting up, and they go, do you want one or something? And all of a sudden, you are tempted. I say, first thing you want to do is go to the bathroom. Literally. Take up, say, I got to pee.
Get out of there. Yeah.
Go to the bathroom and sit down and pee. And then when you're done, if you want to go have a cigarette, you go have that cigarette. Chances are really unlikely you're going to do that. But you got to be able to handle that situation. And usually you got to get yourself out of there to actually do that. So you are probably addicted for life in many ways. And let me tell you my story. So here it is. I've got a little Miata. The Miata is a budget Porsche, by the way. That's what my son-in-law Mitchell said. And for years, in my Miata, in the summer, once a month, I would have a cigarette at night driving through Wisconsin. I would have one cigarette. So I would have roughly 4 to 5 cigarettes a year. It's not going to bother me, 4 to 5 cigarettes. Besides, I got to sin a little. That's okay. You know, I felt like really good. And then about a decade and a half ago, when I finished one cigarette, I wanted another one. And one wasn't enough. And I realized that was it. I'm an addict. I can't do it. And when I talk about it, I think about it. And when I look at it on TV, sometimes I go, that would be really nice to have it. But in fact, it's not really nice to have it. So you've got to be careful, because if you have that addictive, and I do not have an addictive personality, but if that happens to you, you got to move out of the spot. You're only 6 weeks out of it. You're at risk. You're at risk for about 6 to 8 months. That's a high risk time. So I hope that helps.
That helps very much. The key also, after a delicious dinner, not wanting to go out after a satisfying dinner. Yeah. Well, that's very helpful.
Well, satisfying dinner and look at the movies. I mean, satisfying dinner, and often people say it after having sex. I mean, those are the two things. I said this, Carl was smiling, satisfying dinner. Now, I know him well enough to know where his brain was going at that particular time.
I'm thinking about a satisfying dinner.
He's now closing his eyes, and he just rolled his eyes. You know, it's so obvious.
I love a satisfying
dinner.
Yeah,
that's right, satisfying.
Great.
But it is. It's after those certain moments that that we key into doing it. And that's what nicotine does. It's like, I'm going to get an extra boost from that. But those are the times, like you say, where you have it. And that's why you got to be careful whose friends you're around. Because all of a sudden they'll say, hey, when I have a cigarette, you go to the bathroom.
That's very smart. And some friends might like sex and dinner at the same time.
And they may even listen to public radio, right?
Sure.
Right. They love public radio. Well, the timeline and the advice was really helpful. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you. And thanks for sharing that. I appreciate it.
No, thanks.
Of course.
A shout out. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
You have a great day.
Thanks so much for that call at 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, Zorba, let's go to our first healthy living topic today. Cold showers. Is there some information, some studies, some research about cold showers? Is there healthiness to this?
Do you like cold showers?
I do like cold showers. Every now and then I'll do that. Yeah.
So tell me what do you do?
A lot of times it's after like a big workout or something. If it's especially if it's really hot out, I play tennis or something. I'll I won't jump into an ice cold shower. I'll take a regular shower and then I'll slowly work the temperature colder. And then by the end of it, you're just like, almost can't handle it. And then you just see how long you can handle that basically.
So, when you're in there, how long is the cold part of the shower? Are you in like 30 seconds or?
If I can get 30 seconds at the full coldest that I get,
so you like
I feel like
that.
That's a goal. Yeah.
So you feel, when you're done, what do you feel like?
It's amazing. Once you shut that water off, it feels really good.
It feels really good. See, now I am not a proponent of cold showers. Okay. I would never do that. I like warm water. I've got a hot tub. I don't like a sauna. That's like too, I mean, I'm just not a sauna and steam bath person, but I do like hot water. I don't like cold showers. Although as a kid, I would jump into Lake Michigan in Chicago when the temperature of the water went up to from 62 to 64 degrees. We would jump in there. And when we went to Michigan and the water was like 71 or 72, we thought that was hot.
Yeah.
I mean, but that was when I was younger.
Yeah.
I mean, now I'm older. But the real issue is, does cryotherapy work? Is it really good for you? You know, like after a hot tub rolling in the snow, which I did do when I was younger. But
that's great.
Yeah. Well, yeah, maybe when I was younger, but not now. But I did other stupid things when I was younger, too. There's not a lot of research on cold showers. Now, but some people think it's really a psychological issue, not necessarily a physiological issue. And a lot of people, when they do cold showers, do, when you look at research, they do just what you do. They don't necessarily jump in the shower. They often take a warm shower, and then they have a cold shower after that. But if we look at cold showers and whether or not they work once or twice a week. There's some people, they say it increases their mood, their energy, their mental awareness. It makes them feel better, psychological benefits. Some people say spiking the cardiovascular system is good. Then other people go, well, you know what? There's a side effect of cold showers. It might be bad for your heart. Well, you know, I mean, everything good might be bad. And I don't think there's anything bad. So in 2014, researchers wondered, do cold showers actually improve the immune system? So they took a bunch of Dutch men who said, look, we're going to practice meditation, do deep breathing, and do a cold shower for 10 days. And then they actually gave them a bacterial infection by injection. So you can believe it? Yeah, it's pretty.
Sounds fun.
I don't know if that would be done in the U.S., but there. And then they used these other wellness techniques, and lo and behold, they had fewer symptoms. So the Dutch study said, hey, maybe cold showers help the immune system. So maybe it does. Maybe it doesn't. I don't really know the answer. But I think if you feel cold showers sort of inject something good to your body, psychologically, great idea. Physiologically, maybe.
Have you ever been to a spa where they have a hot tub and then right next to it, a cold plunge?
I have.
Cool. Have you done the cold plunge?
I've gone into the hot tub.
Okay.
And I've looked at
the cold plunge
and I see people going into it and I go, I haven't. Now, I go to Steamboat Springs all the time and there's a wonderful spa in Steamboat Springs, a public spa. And then basically people are in this wonderful sort of lava, really warm water,
like, you know, hot
because
springs.
Geo hot springs.
Yeah.
And then there's always, you know, there's always snow and a bunch of people then run into the snow. Mm-hmm. And I've done that.
Yeah.
But as I've got older, I like the hot water and I don't like to go in the cold. So I think there's an age issue, too. But you know what? Whatever makes you feel better is something you ought to consider doing.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. Leave us a voicemail if you want. Let's go to a voicemail now. This is a listener from Tampa, Florida.
I'm hearing more and more information about the health impacts of toxic chemicals used in the manufacture of plastics, particularly single-use plastics, and health issues. Endocrine disruption, cardiovascular disease, and reduced fertility are among the health impacts that are pretty well documented. And I have studies that show this information. Do you have an opinion on this connection and the use of single-use plastics, such as plastic water bottles and plastic food packaging? Thank you.
Well, first of all, there's a lot of information, but there's not a lot of good science. It's all speculative science. So when she said, I've looked at it, meaning you've looked at it on the web, I've got studies to back this up. Then the question is, what are the quality of the studies? And there are things that we really have to think about. We use too much plastic, and putting aside the environmental issues of plastic for a minute, and these are great big giant issues that certainly deserve a discussion, and we've got to get rid of our overuse of plastic. I mean, single-use plastic bottles for drinking water, I mean, that never was the case 20 years ago. Those are big environmental issues. But do they actually disturb the endocrine system? The data really doesn't support that. Speculative data, you know, does it actually destroy the heart? Does it destroy the digestive system? Once again, speculative data. So there's no hard science that really shows that this stuff is bad for us. So people will disagree with me. I mean, we'll get some emails now saying, no, there really is a good study here and a good study there. But my read of the literature doesn't really support it. I think it's an environmental issue for sure. And whether or not it has any long-term events, there is no good credible data that shows that. Now, how about cooking in plastic? Well, that's another thing. You know, putting plastic container in a microwave, that becomes a completely different issue because you may then actually the plastic warms up and then the food warms up and what's going on, that becomes a different issue. So I think cooking in plastic, something you want to avoid. So I have a question for you. When do you ever cook in plastic in the microwave?
I used to, but I haven't for several years now because of what you're talking about.
That's exactly it. I mean, you want to cook in a microsafe product. So I think on an individual basis, that's an important thing because sometimes, because things are easier, we do it. So we put something in plastic in the microwave and we cook it. And, you know, like single-use noodle, noodle things that you can cook in the microwave. I kind of wonder about that. Yeah. So I try to, I want to avoid doing that. And that's a different issue. That is something that you can actually do individually that may be helpful to you.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, before we take a break, Zorba, let's hear from your favorite nitpickers, the Grammar Police.
Oh, no, it's the Grammar Police.
I love when you sing along to that, Zorba.
Yeah, that's right. You know, just make sure it just gives you a chuckle.
Oh,
that's right.
It just adds another beautiful
layer. Another dimension. That's right. That's right.
All right, Zorba. You're lucky enough to get a Grammar Police double shot today.
Oh, wonderful. I love it.
You love a double shot. The first email is from a listener named Jonathan who writes, love your show. You recently talked about the wonderful invention of panko in lieu of cornflakes. And I just wanted to let you know the correct pronunciation
of cornflakes?
Of cornflakes.
Cornflakes?
Yeah. I think you hit it the first time. The correct pronunciation of this Japanese word is panko.
Oh, panko.
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 Love what you do. Thank you.
Panko.
Yeah.
Panko.
I didn't know that.
Panko. Yeah. Panko. But I'm not Japanese.
You're not going to change it,
Japan,
are you? There's
so
no way. You're going to say panko.
Panko. And in the Midwest, that's what we say, panko. We don't say panko.
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 All right. Finally.
But I'm glad. To know that, I think that's really important.
It's good to know.
Yeah. Pronunciation.
Yeah.
Language is not my strong suit. Are you good at language?
I'm okay.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's not my strong suit.
I enjoy it.
Yeah. See, now all four of our kids, we are fluent in Spanish. That's the second language. Then my son Eli knows Spanish, French, because he learned French, and speaks Chinese. So his brain is somewhere else.
Yeah. Yeah, that's hard
that's
to
what
do.
I say. All right. I'll ask him if he says panko.
Panko?
Or panko.
Panko.
I wonder what the Chinese pronunciation of panko is.
That's a good question.
I'll find out.
Let us know, listeners, if you know. All right, finally, an email from Anne in New York City who writes, Dear Zorba, thank you for a great program.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Anne. But I was saddened to hear on today's broadcast that you two have succumbed to a particularly contagious grammatical syndrome.
Oh, my God.
The fear of me. That's in quotes.
The fear of me?
Me. Me is in quotes. Anne says, describing your website, you said, quote, you can see pictures of Tom and I. When it should have been Tom and me.
Oh,
we get
this
a lot. We get a lot
right.
of these.
Actually, they're right. Tom and my. Well, I think about, but that's hard. See, it's pictures of Tom and I am on the website too. See, so that could be.
It just sounds
if
weird.
I did that, but I wouldn't say that. But it's Tom and me. But
that's
that
right.
doesn't sound right to me either.
Yeah.
But you know what? They're right. Whether or not I'll do it or not,
they
I don't
right.
know.
Yeah.
I don't know, but they are right. I'll give them that.
All right.
But Tom and I are on the website. No, Tom and me is on the website.
What about the king and I? Is that supposed to be the king and me?
Let's go on.
How about Roger and me? That's right. Not Roger and I. The
that's
documentary.
Right. Keep on going.
That's all I have.
What about the dog? Isn't there a dog movie? There are a bunch of dog movies.
Benji and Me?
See, Benji and Me. See?
No, wait, Marley and Me.
Got Marley and Me. See? That's it. We could go on. We could do a whole show on the and me. Me, 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 me. Yeah. I don't have too many me's.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks, Anne.
Thank you.
Do you want to join the ever-growing grammar police? Just post on our Facebook page, or you can always email Zorba and Me at...
Zorba@WPR.org.
More of your calls to come, more listener emails, and we'll be cooking up a delicious
Greek orzo salad.
All that coming up on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX. Carl Christensen in Buck Studio in Madison, Wisconsin. I'm sitting right here with Dr. Zorba Pastor. This is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. He's sitting right across the desk from me. He's right there. And what are you wearing today? You have a Hawaiian shirt over a...
Thermopolis.
It's a vintage t-shirt.
There?
Thermopolis, yeah. Wyoming. I've never been there. That's a really cool t-shirt, by the way.
By the way, Thermopolis is great. It's in the middle of... It's right near... It's like 2 to 3 hours outside of Casper.
Okay.
And it was right near when there was the last eclipse, but the eclipse that went through there. Mm-hmm. I went to Thermopolis right near there.
Oh, I remember
pictures
of that.
To watch the eclipse. It was great because I went to be in an area outside mm-hmm. of the major cities, saw the total eclipse of the sun. But Thermopolis is a great tiny town. And if you're ever near there in Wyoming, go there because they have, among other things, great t-shirts.
That's a really cool t-shirt.
Right.
I like
right.
that
Thank
t-shirt.
You. Yeah. Thank you. I'm fashion impaired. So thank you.
This isn't a show about fashion. This is a recipe segment here.
Why not? Why don't we have a fashion segment?
Okay.
You know, I'll tell you something. The grammar
on the radio,
police,
I like
they've
that.
Never done the fashion police. So they haven't looked at fashion. We have to do that.
Okay. I'm marking that
or
down.
Or the food critic police.
Okay. Let's talk about this now. This is a Greek orzo salad.
Do you like Greek food?
Yeah, love it.
You know, I like tasty things. Now, my mother, when she had a salad, I'll tell you what her salad was. Iceberg lettuce.
Uh-huh.
Tomatoes when they were in season. You couldn't get it out of season when I was a kid. Cucumbers were always there. That was it.
Mm.
And then she had... 2 or 3 dressings, Kraft dressings. That was it. Mm-hmm. That was a salad, nothing else. I mean, no salt or pepper, and that's what I thought
Very
salad
bland.
Was. Yeah. How about your mom?
You know what? She used to, I was just thinking mm-hmm. about this the other day. She used to make this taco salad where she would crunch Ooh. Up Doritos.
Uh-huh.
So
Doritos. I love it. Go ahead.
She knew how to get me to eat salad by just crumbling up Doritos on top.
Wonderful.
I was so into that. Except they started to, like, if it was like day 3 or 4 of the salad
of course,
in the fridge, then those Doritos were getting really
Doritos
moist.
And salad. But she got you to eat salad with Doritos.
Yeah, totally.
Not bad.
Not bad.
And you like salad now.
Sure.
When
I
was the last time you put Doritos on your salad?
Just the other day. That's why I was thinking about it. I took a handful, just put it all over. I was like, all right.
How
the kids were like, ooh, good idea.
Reminded you. That's what I was when I was a kid.
Thanks, Mom.
Well, this salad, shout out to your mom,
does
not have Doritos. Greek orzo salad. Start out with 3 tablespoonfuls of red wine vinegar.
3 big T red wine vinegar.
That's right. 2 tablespoonfuls of fresh lemon juice.
Anyway,
1/3 of a cup of olive oil.
1/3 of a cup olive oil.
Where do you get your olive oil?
Just the grocery store.
Well, you have to be careful with olive oil. And I'll tell you why.
It's a lot of fake stuff, right?
Well, the mafia in Italy is involved with olive oil. And some olive oil is not pure olive oil
mm-hmm.
when it says that. And I read a recent article, and then I looked and researched ConsumerLab.com, which is my go-to site, actually rates olive oil, how much it costs per ounce, and tests it to see if it's 100% olive oil. So look at your olive oil, see whether or not it's good. Buy a good brand. If you buy a house brand from a major grocery store, it's more likely to be a good brand
mm-hmm.
and a good Italian brand. But anyway, be careful for olive oil. I've become more. And also, there are different kinds. Some are more robust. Some are less robust. So 1/3 of a cup of olive oil. I usually have 2 or 3 olive oils, and I use a robust olive oil in this Greek orzo salad.
Sounds good.
1/2 teaspoon of garlic powder.
1/2 little tea garlic powder.
So do you have a big container of garlic powder or a small container?
It's this high. You can't see listeners, but this is about a 4-inch.
Four inch.
Yeah.
Okay. So how often do you change the bottle?
Oh boy, I don't know. Not very often.
Well,
I
you know bet what the answer is? Bad, right? Buy a small bottle. Okay. Change it. After a year, it's not going to be as potent.
Okay.
Because once That's you good open advice. It up, it begins to immediately, you know, you can smell it when you open it up.
Mm-hmm.
Well, because you're smelling it, that means it actually begins to lose its potency. Fresh garlic powder, part of the key. And
good
you
spice
could use
advice.
Granulated. What's spice advice?
There you go. There's a segment.
We got a segment. I wonder if anyone could make up a song called Spice Advice.
Yeah, if there was only like a super group of some women who could talk about spices.
Half teaspoon of oregano, fresh if you have it, dried if you don't.
One little tea dried oregano, maybe fresh.
Half teaspoon of kosher salt.
Half little tea kosher salt.
Okay, now you're going to use 16 ounces of orzo, mm-hmm. which is a wonderful pasta.
Mm-hmm. 16 ounces of orzo.
Half cup of halved pitted Kalamata olives. And you're going to use some of the brine.
All right. Half cup halved pitted Kalamata olives plus 2 tablespoons of the brine.
And I'm glad you did that. That really rolled off your tongue.
Did it?
Yeah, it did. Rolled off your
tongue.
It's good. That's why I let you do it. Third of a cup of red onion diced small.
Third of a cup red onion diced.
3 cups of 1 large English cucumber diced small. So these are the cucumbers that have less... have fewer seeds in it.
Mm.
And if you don't have any Greek cucumber, take the seeds out of the cucumber before you dice it.
All right, 3 cups of a large English cucumber diced.
Especially in the summertime, you get these cucumbers that are really large, but they have lots of seeds. Get rid of the seeds. They're not as good.
Okay.
They're not as good as the actual, the actual cucumber itself.
Okay.
16 ounces of grape tomatoes halved.
16 ounces grape tomatoes halved.
A bell pepper. If you want some color, use an orange or a yellow or a red or a green.
Okay.
Any
bell pepper would do. Pepper.
Half cup of feta cheese cubed.
Feta cheese cubed.
And once again, fresh oregano or any fresh green spice that you may have growing. Fresh oregano would be good. Pasta would be good too, but oregano is best here.
That sounds good. Let's make it.
Make it easy to make. Salt some water, bring it to a boil, add the orzo, read the package, make it al dente.
There, you nailed that one.
Al dente. You know, you may add an extra minute. Drain it, rinse it under cold water. Meanwhile, in a large bowl, combine all the stuff we did. Combine all of the dressing ingredients, then add the olives, the red onion, and the brine from the olives. Mix it together. Stir in the pasta, and then put in the cuke, the tomatoes, and the bell pepper, after the pasta's in there. So you're not going to stir it nearly as much. Little salt and pepper as you may have it, and then add the feta when you're finished with it. Top it off with maybe some fresh spices. Maybe have a little Retsina. Think about Greece. And if not, put on some music from ABBA, Mamma Mia, and then you'll be there.
Wait, isn't that a Swedish band?
It was a Swedish band, but the story was in Greece.
There you go. Okay, got it. 800-462-7414.
A mixed metaphor music.
I love it. 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, let's go back to the phones now and help out a listener in Wayzata, Minnesota. Hi.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Sure. How can we help?
My question is, I'll be approaching 60 years old soon, and there's so much information about intermittent fasting out there. I wanted to get some insight on the thoughts of intermittent fasting for the 55-plus age group, where to start, and basically if it's safe or not.
Uh-huh. So do you have any medical problems right now that you're dealing with?
Yeah, just pre-diabetic.
Mm-hmm. Pre-diabetic, okay. Okay, weight, overweight, right weight, shed a few pounds, gain a few pounds, where do you sit with that?
Well, medically I'm obese, but I'm I don't feel like I'm obese. I walk 5 miles a day. I eat pretty healthy.
Sure.
I am a recovering alcohol addict, so I've got some sugar problems from that. I quit 10 years ago. And so that's what I'm dealing with.
And let's not forget, if you only look at BMI, I would have weightlifters who would come into my office who are all muscle, and it would show that they're obese. And I thought, well, BMI doesn't show that. They're not obese. They were all muscle. But intermittent fasting, I think it's really good. I mean, I think if it's done the proper way, especially if you're, if you're pre-diabetic, and then it's a function of what you eat in between that intermittent fasting. So, you follow, there are different ways to do it. you know, some people, you know, you don't eat after a certain time. I'll tell you the traditional Buddhist way, which was intermittent fasting, is you ate in the morning, you ate at lunch, and then you had an early dinner, and you didn't eat until the next morning. When I say an early dinner, it was really equivalent to like three or four in the afternoon. So that's been a very traditional thing in Buddhist cultures, many Buddhist cultures in Thailand, in India, in Tibet. And in other cultures, it's also been the same way, the concept of fasting. But the issue with fasting is also, what sort of calories are you getting after the fast? So I have truckers who are clearly overweight, and they do intermittent fasting not because they want to. They'll say, well, I don't have breakfast and I don't have lunch, and then I have a big dinner. And during their dinner time, they eat basically too many calories. So I think part of it is, what are you eating for the fasting? And you want to look at a Mediterranean diet, plentiful fruits and vegetables, colorful, you know, whole grains when you're eating potatoes, which are really good. You don't want to use too much butter. You may want to use some sour cream. You certainly want to eat the skin. You want fiber in your diet to slow down your digestion if you're a pre-diabetic. So have you tried intermittent fasting?
Yes, I have. Mm-hmm. And there's times when I'm extremely hungry, and mm-hmm. there's other times where I feel like I could go for two or three more hours. And so I do stretch that out.
What are your times that you eat, from what to what?
I typically do anywhere from a 14-hour fast to a 18-hour fast.
Mm-hmm.
Dinner at 4 o'clock.
Good.
Eating the next morning, not till, you know, 7 or 8 mm-hmm. o'clock.
Good. I think that's good. The answer is yes. It's good for you. It's healthy. If you're pre-diabetic, you want to stay on that pre-diabetic side. And that means the Med diet, the Mediterranean diet, is the best food for you to eat.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thanks. And thanks for sharing that. And you're right. Even though the BMI may say you're obese, you're not necessarily obese at all. BMI is only one number, and it's overused completely.
Awesome. That's great to hear. Thank you.
You're welcome. Take care.
Thanks so much for that call at 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, let's go to a voicemail now. This is a listener from Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin.
I have a question. When making egg salad lately, it doesn't last very long in the fridge and gets real runny. What's the best way to keep it in the refrigerator? Thank you. Bye-bye.
I think she has a good point. Do you ever make egg salad at home?
Sometimes my wife does. Yeah, I love egg salad.
Yeah, it's great. Do you ever look at it the next day?
Yeah, it doesn't hold that well.
It doesn't hold that well. So the moisture comes out of a bunch of things. But I mean, I make egg salad, and the next day it is runny.
How do you keep it dry?
How do you keep it dry? Well, what I do is I take it out and put it in a strainer. And then I may add a little more mayo, a little more this or that. But, you know, it's coming out from the veggies that you put in. Because what do you put in when you make your egg salad?
Like a little chopped onions, maybe some dill weed. Uh-huh. Do you put that in there sometimes?
Dill weed. We should do some egg salad recipe.
Let's do an egg salad. Okay. You know,
I like the crunch. Obviously, I'm still a celery, a celery
some
person.
Chives, maybe.
Yeah, chives. Then I put in apricots. Dried apricots.
Interesting.
And then I cut them up, little apricots, or I do some raisins.
How about some capers?
Sometimes I put in actually, you know something? We've got to make a egg salad.
I'm writing all this stuff.
I'm ready. This is not even a recipe time. But the answer is, the way to do it, I mean, we think we're a cooking show, but we are, because food is very important, because when you eat good stuff, it really does make a difference. And the answer is, put it in a little strainer to get rid of the water in there, and then you may have to add some other spice, some other mayo, if you're using mayo, or Miracle Whip, if you're a Miracle Whip person.
Are you a Miracle Whip person?
I used to be, but I don't have it very often. But can't you think about it and know the taste?
Yeah, it doesn't hold up to mayo, I feel
it
like.
It doesn't hold up. No.
There's no miracle
Well,
there.
And I can tell you how it doesn't hold up. You go grocery shopping.
Mm-hmm.
You ever see Miracle Whip on the shelf?
Sure. I just don't pay attention
it's
to it anymore.
It's the bottom
though.
Of the shelf.
Oh, really?
So that means it doesn't sell well. At eye level, it's mayonnaise and all the mayonnaise variations. But Miracle Whip, because that was really invented because initially the thing was that mayo may carry salmonella if you have it at a picnic. It does not, people. That's old mayo before the new mayo was made. The present mayo does not go bad at a picnic. It's an old tale, which was true in the olden days.
Interesting.
Back in the 30s.
Myth-busting right now. We haven't done a myth-buster in a while.
That's right.
That was it
right
there.
We haven't done much. We have a myth-buster. That's right. Quackery.
There you go.
Let's go.
Mayo quackery. 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, before the break, Zorba, it's time to log into the Zorba Pastor on Your Health Facebook page for another edition of Facebook Feedback.
Facebook Feedback.
All right, Zorba, this one comes from a listener who says, you were her doctor a long time ago Oregon, Wisconsin. This is from Betty, who writes, I have a hole in my heart. What can I expect? Will I be on blood thinners the rest of my life?
Well, whether or not you need to be on blood, I don't know why she's actually on. I mean, that's, I don't know.
We're missing some information here, obviously.
Right. You can have, quote, a hole in your heart. You can have a ventricular septal defect, a VSD, or an atrial septal defect. You can have atrial fibrillation, which means you've got an irregular heartbeat. There are many reasons to be on a blood thinner. The real issue, if you're on a blood thinner, to ask is warfarin was the old blood thinner that we used for many, many years. Inexpensive, but it's got to be regulated. You've got to have blood tests all the time, and sometimes you have to stop eating certain green vegetables. But the newer blood thinners, they used to be called NOACs, which were novel oral anticoagulants. They're now called direct oral DOACs. Direct oral anticoagulants are actually superior to warfarin, easier to regulate, but quite expensive. They're expensive. They, you know, if you have a copay, it could easily be $30 to $60 a month. And if you're paying, if you're actually paying full price, it may be $100 to $150. I haven't looked at it recently. But those drugs are better and they don't require tests. So the question is, number one, do you need it? Got to ask your doctor and your cardiologist. And number two, what's the best one to be on? Is it warfarin, which is useful in certain things, such as a valve replacement, artificial valve? You've got to be on warfarin. Or should you be on the newer drug? That's the question you should ask your primary care doctor and ask your cardiologist. Whether or not you need it, I don't have enough information from that. But that's a good question to ask them.
Do you have a healthy living question for the good doc? I guarantee he'll provide a wholehearted answer. Just post on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
All right, more of your calls coming up, more emails and voicemails, and we'll tackle another healthy living topic. So keep it right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
From PRX.
Carl Christensen, sitting in Buck's studio with Dr. Zorba Pastor. You're listening to Zorba Pastor on Your Health. And can I just say really quick, Zorba, to our listeners, thanks for listening to this show.
Oh, yes.
There's a lot of options out there of things
that's
to listen to,
thank
podcasts, other, you know, classic rock radio, maybe.
Yeah. No, but we... But we have a lot of loyal listeners. We do.
We have loyal,
and then we have people find us randomly and we find the advice useful. And we do this because we want to give people good advice because the informed person gets better medical care. That's been shown time and time and again. And better, more information you get, the better off you're going to be.
There you go.
And public radio is a great place to get that information because it's going to be good information. I mean, you know, it's, you know, it's from a you know, an edited, you know, source. It's good information because you look on the web, and as you know, the web has lots of good information and lots of bad information.
It's a jungle out
there. And lots of misinformation. So.
All right. Well, if you want some good advice, you can call this number, 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. 7413. But before we get back to those calls, Zorba, healthy living topic number two today, I'm just going to read this headline. Antipsychotic drugs for dementia are linked to more harms than previously acknowledged.
Well,
what does this mean?
They've been linked to harms for years. So first of all, you've got people with dementia. So, you know, and sometimes with dementia, they have disinhibition. So all of a sudden they do things you don't like. They may be aggressive, they may yell, they may scream, and we don't have good drugs to use. So these are the drugs that are often used, and they've had side effects.
Why are docs still using these then?
Well, problem is we don't necessarily have an alternative. So the drugs that are often used are risperidol. That's one of the drugs. Haldol is another drug. These are drugs that are commonly used. Quetiapine, which is another drug that is often used. And we've known for years they're associated with falling. Mm-hmm. We know when people use it, they fall. But recent studies have shown they may increase the risk for stroke and blood clots and heart failure and even kidney, because there was a recent study in the BMJ that showed there are lots of other reasons not to use these drugs, especially in people who are older.
Okay, but what else is there to treat patients with besides these, you know, somewhat harmful drugs?
Well, that's the problem. So for many years, we use drugs, we use benzodiazepines. So they're drugs like Xanax, the older drug was Valium. And then the feds rightfully said, you really shouldn't be using these drugs because people are more likely to fall. They become addicted, habituated to it. So then you said we should use antidepressants, which turn out to be the right drug to use. Because antipsychotics are clearly not the right drug to use, but there are antidepressants which can be very useful. And for a lot of older people, if one antidepressant doesn't work, you switch to another one. So if an SSRI doesn't work, like Prozac, then you switch to something called an SNRI, like venlafaxine or Cymbalta. And if that doesn't work, you do an atypical antipsychotic, such as bupropion or another one. So you try different drugs for different doses to see if those work, because those don't seem to have the same side effects as the antipsychotics. And the problem is a number of physicians don't necessarily go through the safer drugs. And the BMJ article is a wake-up call to all of us who treat dementia in older people to stay away from the antipsychotics, to stay away from the benzodiazepines, and to look at the antidepressants, because they can be worthwhile and can help without causing harm.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, let's go to a voicemail now, Zorba. This is a listener from Knoxville, Tennessee.
Hi, I just wanted to say it might be good if he mentioned in his discussion on xylitol that it's very toxic to dogs. It causes their death. Anyway, just wanted to pass that along. Thanks. Bye.
Right. It is. It is bad for dogs. Now, xylitol, by the way, is common in gum.
Mm-hmm. We were talking about this a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, we were talking about it. I mean, you know, dogs
don't
like
lot of stuff.
Dogs do not like to chew gum.
No.
I want to put that up.
Yeah,
I have a
know.
Dog. I mean, they'll eat anything. But xylitol is a type of sugar alcohol. And the real question is, you know, it's used as a sugar substitute that's often used, you know, because there's not, it's not very caloric, but bloating, gas, upset stomach can do it. If you have too much xylitol, a lot of people get diarrhea.
Hmm.
And the real issue with taking anything that is an artificial sugar substitute is, does that really increase your appetite later on? But putting that to the side, there's some research that came out of the Cleveland Clinic that it may also put you at an increased risk for cardiovascular disease.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a study by a guy out of the Cleveland Clinic, Dr. Hansen, took healthy volunteers, given a drink sweetened with 30 grams of xylitol, so it was a xylitol-sweetened drink, similar to what you'd find in a single scoop of keto-friendly ice cream.
Okay.
So it's used in keto-friendly ice cream and cookies that are marketed for people with diabetes. Right? And when you're a diabetic, you're at an increased risk for heart disease. So every volunteer study had platelets that were looked at, among other things. Now, one of the reasons we take aspirin if we're at risk for heart disease is to keep our platelets from clotting. Lo and behold, xylitol, people who had a lot of it, had more, had platelets that were more likely to clot. So it might be that that actually puts them more at risk for heart disease.
Hmm.
So it's a real issue. You know, whether or not you should, if you have diabetes, if you have heart disease, should you take anything with xylitol? And here it is, you're taking a keto-friendly diet because you think that's good for your health, but you may be harming it in some other ways. So I don't think xylitol is completely safe, and certainly not in large amounts. So anyone who's on a keto diet, if you're having lots of xylitol, you got to think again. And then again, if you're at risk for heart disease, you've got to make sure you take your aspirin every day, because that will mitigate the effects that xylitol may have on platelets.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, Zorba, it's time for the segment where a real doctor takes on the legions of keyboard doctors out there.
The keyboard
flourishing
doctors
on the internet. We call this one Google Doc.
I think we ought to have keyboard doc and have the sound of people, you know, doing
just
stuff
typing
on keyboard. Well, typing like an old-fashioned typewriter, king, you know, at the end.
I like
this
idea.
Did you ever use tape recorder that it pinged when you were getting close to the end of the line?
I don't. Maybe when I was really little.
Well, what happened was you're typing and you want to know when it's going to end, when you're getting to the end of the carriage, because you've got to decide whether or not you're going to put a dash in between a word, we'll say, like condiment. So it would ping when there were maybe 5 to 6 more clicks left before you were at the end of the page.
Okay.
That's what the little bell was.
Interesting.
You never knew that, did you?
I just thought it just meant you're at the end of the page. I didn't know
the
hyphen thing.
No, you're not at the end of the page. It's before the end of the page.
Okay.
Because the ping is before the end of the page, so you know you've got 4 or 5 strokes left.
I see.
You see. Yeah. It was like, get ready, you got to go and push the carriage. Clearly, you were not brought up in the 50s.
I wasn't, no. It was more of the 90s, I guess.
Oh, my God.
Late 80s. So the following email came from Sandra in Northern Idaho, who writes, "Greetings, I love your show. I have a reminder on my phone to be sure to tune in." That's pretty nice.
Oh, wonderful.
Thanks,
that
Sandra.
Really nice.
"Some years ago, I heard that culinary use of lavender was a no-no for boys because it can affect their sterility later in life. Is this a wives' tale or is it based on science? I like the taste of lavender more than the scent, but I've been very careful when I use it. Lavender creme brulee, lavender shortbread, lavender lemonade, etc.
I'm concerned
because it's showing up commercially. Thank you in advance. What a wonderful public service you are."
Oh, how nice that was.
That's
really nice. No, it's one of those things that you see on the net that just doesn't make any sense at all.
Okay.
You know, that we often call an old wives' tale, but actually we should just call it an old web's tale.
An old
web's
tale.
Instead of there, because it's been on the web for a long time. And it is an old web tale. But the answer is sure. I think you can use it. There's no evidence at all. I don't know how it started. You know, some of these things start just as an urban myth and they get carried forward. But I happen to love creme brulee and the idea of using lavender. I kind of like the smell.
Yeah,
so maybe I'll try that the next time.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks. Do you want the good doc to verify something you read online? Just post on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, let's go to a voicemail now. This is from a listener in El Paso, Texas.
"What is the best cure for puffy eyes or dark circles under the eyes, puffiness? I use all kinds of creams to reduce the puffiness. I see all that Juvederm and Botox, all that. But what is the best, without any kind of surgery, that I can possibly purchase for underneath the puffy eyes? Thank you."
Well, this is a common problem that's not easy to do. So some puffy eyes are actually due to the fact that, much of puffy eyes are due to the fact that the subcutaneous fat under your eyes goes away as you get older. So if you look at little kids, they never have puffy eyes unless something happened to them because they have a robust fat underneath there. And as we get older, and sometimes the medications that we take reduce the fat, and that's when the wrinkles occur. And often when you lose the elasticity of the skin, then basically you've got a puffiness that is sort of hanging there. And that's one of the issues. He mentioned something really good. Botox, which is expensive and is only temporary, can actually help with puffy eyes. But sometimes they're discolored eyes, and sometimes there are creams that you can get from your dermatologist that will actually go under the eye that will help the puffiness. But getting Retin-A, which is what we use for acne, and getting some over-the-counter Retin-A. You can go to your pharmacy and say, what is similar to Retin-A that you put under a puffy eye can actually help. It takes about 3 to 6 weeks before it really make a difference. It's used for acne, but drugs that are similar to that, such as Differin, D-I-F-F-E-R-I-N, so which is a retinoid, can work as well as Retin-A, and you don't need a prescription. And it's an acne treatment, but it actually works for puffiness under the eye. It does something to the skin. I'm not going to go into exactly what it does, but that can make a difference also. So you want to look at that because that's going to be the cheapest. Mm. You want to look at something that can actually protect the skin. Make sure when you're out in the sun, you're actually using a cream or using a sunscreen to keep that from happening. And then, of course, if that fails, you have to go to a dermatologist to see what else may work. But unfortunately, it's part of the aging process. And of course, a good night's sleep can make a big difference.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, before we head out today, Zorba, we don't mind taking our lumps
and bumps
from the grammar police or getting into some healthy debate during the disagreeing with the doc segment. But sometimes it's just nice to hear that we're doing a good job here, right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
I cued you up to agree with me.
That's right.
The following email is from Mark, who writes, I listen to your radio show and every time I come away with a bit of knowledge. For example, yesterday, I learned that the older we get, the less our taste buds taste. I was surprised when talking to my brothers recently, we're all in our 60s, that all three of us crave ice cream now. That fact now makes sense.
Right.
Thanks for the entertainment and education.
You can feel cold and you can feel sweet. Mm-hmm. You can feel hot. You know, hot, and you can, of course, taste pepper, and people like
our
salt as they get older.
Change.
Our taste buds change. And what happens is, as our sense of smell decreases, our sense of taste decreases, because other than sweet, sour, salt, bitter, hot, and cold, it's everything else basically is going through the nose. And so as you smell less, you taste less, and that makes a big difference as you get older. So the answer is, spice it up a different way to make sure that you eat healthy food, food that's not just sweet and salty. You've got to make sure you use other spices that you can taste, and you may have to experiment.
Hmm. That was a nice email. Thanks, Mark.
Thank you.
Great taste.
Yes. Oh,
Has Dr. Zorba helped you out?
Oh, my goodness.
Please share your story with us by posting on our Facebook page or send us an email at
1-800-462-7413.
What's the email?
I'm sorry. Zorba@WPR.org. But that phone number just keeps on ringing. It's an earworm in my head.
It's lovely. Should we do this again next week, Zorba?
Absolutely.
All right. If you missed anything during the show or you just want to stream the show online anytime, visit us on the web
at zorbapastor.org or, of course, through Facebook.
And don't forget, you can call us anytime to leave us your question at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is me, Carl Christensen, and our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Carl Christensen, asking you to join us on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Did you miss something on today's show? Simply go to zorbapastor.org to catch up on all things Zorba. There you will find recipes from the show, links to the Facebook page, Zorba's Healthy Living articles, and you can subscribe to the weekly podcast. On the web, that's zorbapastor.org.
From WPR.